All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Friday, November 10th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we are going to be breaking down every game for FanDuel and DraftKings week 10 in the NFL. We'll go through with the cash game considerations, although we talked some about that on the podcast. Guys, you can consider, games you can kind of avoid here for NFL week 10. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to give you optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. We'll cover you for NBA as well. Everything that we offer under our subscription package is available for that one price. So go check that out. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and you're all good to go. Buddy, week 10 in the NFL looks moderately interesting. We talked a lot. We did break down a lot of guys yesterday on our cash game podcast. So if you want to go check that out, it's in the feed, week 10 cash game plays. If we skip over some of these guys here, it's because we went in depth on a couple of these guys pretty deep, pretty hard. We went hard on them yesterday, I would say. So
I'd say we went deep as all.
So go check that out.
To the bottom.
And we'll just there might be some guys we just reference and then kind of skip over. So let's get into some of these games. Some interesting ones for sure coming off the Seattle win over Arizona. Actually, we did see a little Adrian Peterson showing he might be a little old. It's kind of hard when you carry the ball 40 times one week and then 4 days later asked to do it again. So he had like 17.
He did. He carried it 21 times.
For 27 yards.
And I assume, I was going to say, I assume it went great. I hadn't checked the box score yet, but
I actually don't do typically. I typically avoid Thursday night slates just because I don't find there to be a ton of value. The last times I did play cash games in because I wanted to play Russell Wilson and McCaffrey in the Monday night. It struck me as kind of a double dip of value for those two guys in a place where you couldn't get them on the main slate. So Wilson, all in all, and it didn't break it out of the box completely, but I had a manageable game.
But there's so many bad plays at quarterback that I feel like manageable is serviceable for this week.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, and that actually is a theme that we talked about that yesterday, a quarterback that is possibly going to be a week to go cheap. The first game is Cleveland and Detroit. We talked about Stafford a lot yesterday, and sort of the reasoning behind Stafford and cash games is Detroit, big favorite here, can't run the ball at all. Cleveland coming off a bye week, they still haven't won a game yet. I'm not sure if this is going to be the week. They had 2 weeks to prepare. I'm not sure what that does. I don't know. I mean, I could prepare for 2 weeks too to play Detroit. I wouldn't necessarily be a favorite to beat them.
So, studying the film.
Cleveland side of the ball feels like a complete zero to me, just in terms of their offensive production. They can't really get anything going. Their quarterback play is garbage. On the Detroit side, we did talk about Stafford. We talked about Marvin Jones. Amir Abdullah, I mean, I'm wondering your thoughts here. They're a big favorite. He's their lead back, and typically home favorites, running backs, especially with spreads like this at minus 11, these are running backs that we want to target. He just seems like he sucks so bad that I'm not sure we can go there. Do you think there is value on a guy like Abdullah in this matchup?
No, I don't. I mean, he was insanely bad last week, a much better matchup. I think this week coming in, Cleveland is allowing 2.7 yards per carry, the best in the NFL this season. And I mentioned this on the Cash Game podcast, but it's not like people haven't had incentive to run against them. And they face pretty good running backs too, Le'Veon Bell, you know. I think I'm not going to play running backs against Cleveland while this whole situation shakes out. And I think Amir Abdullah is just the wrong kind of running back to play against them. Like, they have a pretty good passing attack, a terrible run game. They're going up against a team with a bad passing defense and a good run defense. So I get that he's cheap and all that stuff, and the opportunity is there. But this, I think, qualifies in the not all opportunities created equal thing. Like, Abdullah or anyone, I think, running on Detroit right now would have a hell of a time mounting any sort of reasonable fantasy production. Not to say it's impossible, but just definitely not something I'm going to prioritize.
Yeah, there's a term for that, and I forget who coined it, but it's called bottle defense, where you are really good at one thing and really bad at the other thing, and that's just where you want to attack this. Cleveland's just the poster team for this kind of idea, at least this season, because they are very, very bad against the pass, and that's great. I think that lines up really well for our purposes in this game. Marvin Jones, you know, according to Pro Football Focus, doesn't have the best matchup in the world, and he is going to be shadow covered. So I don't know if that changes any of our thought process on what we talked about with Jones from yesterday. He's not getting, our system at least, he's not getting as great a multiplier as he has in the past. So but Golden Tate also, I mean, do you think, is it worth just considering all the wide receivers here? I mean, even like Eric Ebron, kind of, I always feel like he's gonna be better than he is, and he just hasn't really never really totally gets there. We talked about a lot about Jones. Do you like Tate also for possibly double digit targets in this game?
I like Tate for this game. I wouldn't go as deep as Eric Ebron. You know, Cleveland's only fine against the pass. They're not terrible. Bottom 10 team in terms of yards allowed per attempt. Tate, I do think is interesting if Marvin Jones rates to see somewhat decreased opportunity. I think he's a little on the pricey side for what he brings to the table, but for cash game purposes, I think it's a totally reasonable option.
So Jason McCourty is going to be the cover, looks to be the cover corner.
And Rutgers? Our Rutgers buddy?
Yeah, the McCourty brothers. I guess they all did go there. Devin McCourty. Are they related? Yeah, probably. It's McCourty.
I think so.
Pretty rare. Cornerbacks. Secondary. I can't think of the word. Secondary as well, the same names. Next game we have here is New Orleans going into Buffalo. New Orleans is a -3 favorite against the Bills. Guys like Thomas and Ingram were guys that we've targeted in previous weeks because we liked their opportunity. Do you still see that carrying over into this game, or does like them being outside on the road kind of reduce maybe some of our expectation on the guys on the Saints side of the ball?
Well, I think it does for Breeze for sure. I think the home road splits over the course of his career are worth something. And the weather doesn't look to be great in Buffalo this weekend. Like the North has finally hit this cold snap. And it's just hard to imagine that this is the week you would want to pick Breeze out of all the quarterbacks. The other guys are a little bit more interesting, or I think I'd want to go a little deeper. So, I mean, I think it affects the team in general. I think Vegas can sort of account for that, though. So I don't want to get too carried away with my own subjective insertions, I guess, but I am a little bit worried about this Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara situation. Kamara is just looking like the more dynamic back. I mean, he's doing a lot more with his touches than Ingram. Ingram, of course, had the 2-fumble game a couple games ago, came back last week, had 17 touches, which isn't so bad against Tampa Bay. But Kamara went out there and had 16 touches, and that's as close a split as we've seen in touches all season long. I am definitely a little bit concerned about that. So I think I'll probably stay away from the New Orleans running game. I think on the passing side, Michael Thomas, you know, he has been a limited participant in practice, but he kind of fits the profile of the exact kind of wide receiver I like to look at, which is a guy who's getting a lot of targets, turning that into a lot of receptions, but hasn't punched in a touchdown recently because, you know, we saw earlier in the season, it's not like they're averse to passing to him in the end zone or anything. It just hasn't come together in the last few games. And if that does, the $7,600 price tag is probably too cheap. I think he's one of the safer guys in that price range. So I still like Thomas here. I'm a little bit more skeptical of the rest of the Saints offense.
Yeah, the Buffalo secondary is good. And that has me a little concerned. Like all of their cornerbacks rate out pretty highly here, Gaines, White, and Leonard Johnson. So I think that for Thomas, I like him as a gentleman, him as a GPP play. For safety wise, I think there are a couple other guys that we talked about yesterday in terms of just like sort of in his target, implied target range that I probably like that are one, some are coming in just cheaper, like Marvin Jones we talked about. He's trending around the same amount of targets as Thomas and it probably is in a slightly better matchup here. And then some of the other more expensive guys. That's the kind of the only reason I might try to avoid him today.
Didn't you just tell me Marvin Jones had a bad matchup this week, though?
He did, but he's just cheaper. I'm saying, like, if all things, both their matchups are bad and implied targets are the same, then I would just go for the cheaper guy. That's more what I meant about price.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Thomas is a little bit more of a possession guy, but he is considerably cheaper. And obviously, Jones has shown a pretty good, you know, propensity to catch balls and be targeted a lot. So, yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
I'm with you on the Ingram Kamara thing. I think we are entering possibly just a complete timeshare here. 36 snaps for Ingram, 25 to Kamara. Both of those are trending in the wrong directions. And then we have some context behind it too, because like you mentioned those fumble things. That's the thing that is real. Like where coaches will, you will get benched for fumbling, especially for fumbling twice. Like coaches just don't want that to happen. I don't blame them, but fumbles do strike me. Like Ingram is like not known to be a fumble guy. So like it doesn't strike me. Probably just some bad luck, but I'm not sure people evaluate that correctly all the time. But this actually kind of doesn't matter though, because if Kamara is just good, then he should get carries as well. So I think that I have lowered Ingram's expectation a little bit because one, I don't think that he should be coming in top of the points per dollar or near the top of the points per dollar, which he was based on some probably outsized expectation. On the Bill side, you know, LeSean McCoy, I couldn't get that out. LeSean McCoy, he's been a guy who we've seen get crazy amounts of touches at times. And we've also just seen him completely disappear, right? Like he's had games where he's, you know, carried the ball 20 plus times and looked really good. And then like last week, he carries the ball 12 times for 25 yards. How do we evaluate the opportunity for a guy like McCoy here? Saints defense, not as bad as they've been in the past, but clearly not one of the best defenses. And they're very bad against the run. Do you like McCoy at all this week?
Not really. I was kind of liking McCoy prior to that. I mean, we weren't going to really run him out there last week, but there was a lot to like. I mean, I have trouble figuring out what the actual heck was going on last week in this Jets game, pardon my French, because prior to that, he was pretty darn steady. I mean, 20, 19, 23, and 27 carries. 3.977 targets, and then he goes down to 12 carries and one target. Like, I wonder if there's some internal nonsense going on there, or if Buffalo, you know, is not, I don't know, just doesn't think he's giving them the best chance, or, you know, whatever. I'm not exactly sure, but that looks like an institutional shift to me. It didn't seem totally dependent on game script earlier this season, whether McCoy was going to get his touches or not. Maybe they just trust Taylor now a little bit more. The two games where he saw a few carries earlier in the season were Carolina and Denver, which have excellent run defenses, but he still saw seven targets out of the backfield. So I can't figure out exactly what the deal is with McCoy. And for me, that basically means I'm not going to play him in cash games. I think there are, you know, when we only need to pick two running backs overall on FanDuel, I can't imagine he would be one of them, given that he just came off his by far his worst game of the season, but also the game where he had the least opportunity.
I think the Bills are going to get Charles Clay back, so he could make an interesting tight end play. He's still coming, I think, on the cheaper side. He's been limited in practice, but I believe he's going to be back coming up this week. Yeah, I think I'm with you. I mean, the Saints are really bad against the run. They're 28th in DVOA against the run this year. They're kind of a bottle defense going the other way. Fourth against the pass, 28th against the run. I think there is a chance we see a bounce back game from McCoy. I think he strikes me as an interesting tournament play for that reason, because no one's going to want to play him after that last performance. But he's also just the kind of guy that we could be just talking about next week and be like, yeah, LeSean McCoy back to 21 touches this week, right? Like, there's a game script that plays out for him in some scenarios that he's definitely a guy I think we could be discussing next week as he did bounce back, because these things do tend to just fluctuate from time to time. All right, next game up on the docket, we have the Jets, the aforementioned Jets, going in and playing Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is going to be without Jameis and Mike Evans. I'm wondering your thoughts here. Ryan Fitzpatrick is very cheap. He's like $4,900 on DraftKings, $6,100 on FanDuel. It's about as low as you're ever going to see quarterback prices, especially on DraftKings. That $4,900 price is the very definition of punt play in terms of quarterback, really almost for any position. But we talked about Eli in the same price range yesterday, $5,100, and kind of made a little bit of peace with the idea that this was possibly going to be the plan. Do you think the same thing fits for Fitzpatrick? He's played NFL snaps. Like, he's not a complete unknown, right? Like, he has marshaled the team. He's not good by any means, but he's marshaled the team in the past for entire seasons. At $4,900, is this a guy that we want to start considering against this Jets defense here?
Yeah, I think you always want to start considering guys at that price range, like, you know, and it shouldn't take a lot to talk you into it, as long as you can find something nice to say. I will say on Fitzpatrick, I worry that we're a little bit high on his projection right now, simply because Winston, who is in this starting role, averaged 14 fantasy points a game, and he's inarguably a better quarterback than Ryan Fitzpatrick is. But we've seen with this Tampa Bay offense, like, they can just sputter out and die really easily. And I think the main reason for that is they simply don't have anyone to catch possession balls, and that really hurts new quarterbacks in my mind. So, you know, Tampa Bay brings Mike Evans, who, you know, has always been very, very erratic, and to go alongside of him, for God knows why, they just got a worse version of him in DeSean Jackson. And so obviously Evans right now with the suspension, but I just don't know who's meant to catch these short balls. Is it Adam Humphries, like, you know, Cameron Brate? I just don't know, and I think that makes me skeptical enough. Like, there's just no tools here, right? I mean, who, not to say it's impossible, and that's a really, really cheap price, and I think we should still consider it, but I guess I'm a lot less enthusiastic than I would be if he were on a team with anyone with any track record of catching balls in short yardage this season.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I would actually feel better about him even if Evans was just playing. So,
of course, just give me someone talented at least to draw double coverage. I mean, like, I just don't even know what they're supposed to do here.
I think from that point of view, if I was choosing between the cheaper quarterbacks, I'd still trend toward Eli, just because I think we are getting... it's crazy to call it Eli steady or like a more known quantity.
Well, we get more certainty. We at least have some precedent to point to. I mean, with Fitzpatrick, like, sure, we've seen him be okay in the past. We've also seen him be completely awful in the past too. And like, you don't want to pencil him in for a negative performance here or anything. You don't want to go too far, but I think that if they're in the same price range, like, I think I would consider Fitzpatrick a little bit more if there weren't another, in my mind, pretty reasonable option at a low price point. But given that Eli is right there, and obviously the savings matter, it still is significant, but I just don't, it feels like you're taking on an awful lot of risk. And I'm just not sure that's where I like to go for my cash game purposes.
The Jets are favored on the road here, which you're not going to see that very often. But they're a team that it's very hard to get a handle on. That even last week when they decided they wanted to run the ball or were able to run the ball a lot, we saw Forte get 14 carries, Elijah McGuire get 13 carries, and Powell get 9 carries. It is a complete just three-way, three-headed monster there. Can't really trust anything in the run game. You could take a chance on it, I guess, if you think that Forte is just the goal line back and he's going to be the guy that's going to get the touchdowns. I think there's, you know, there's some touchdown upside on him. But in terms of if you think any one of these guys is just going to see a majority of the carries, they really haven't shown any willingness to do that. And then the passing game, I mean, I believe Curse is out, or no, Jeremy Curley's out. I guess they have Robbie Anderson's been a deep downfield threat, but I'm pretty uninterested. I mean, are you seeing something on the Jets here that I'm not seeing? I'm pretty uninterested in this team.
No, sir. Okay. I'm not seeing anything on the Jets that you're not seeing.
Sometimes we think alike. All right. Next game, Pittsburgh goes in and plays the Colts. We talked a ton about Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, seeing them
play them.
Both have pretty steady cash game plays here. At least Bell is going to be complete chalk. I think that people will then try to decide if they want to fit both of these guys into lineups. I think we are probably going to. The Colts did cut Von. Well, he got hurt, but they also just cut Vontae Davis. He'd been playing really bad this year anyway. But I think that it still rates out that Browns has a plus matchup against Indianapolis here. So we don't need to dive too far back into those guys. Wondering your thoughts here on Roethlisberger, though. Roethlisberger is coming very cheap. He's another guy that's been just complete trash this year. He's 7,600 on FanDuel, but he's cheaper on DraftKings, where he's only 6,600. Do you see, is there a cash game case for Roethlisberger here? Our system doesn't hate him for the price. I wonder if he's just like a more expensive version of it than Eli. Like, I wonder, what are your thoughts on Big Ben?
Yeah, I think a more expensive version of Eli is a pretty fair assessment. And I think unlike Eli, he stands at a much greater risk for Le'Veon Bell just to get 35 carries or whatever. So I think that's really what's hurting Roethlisberger here. I think if Bell were catching more balls out of the backfield, maybe, or if the usage hasn't been so insane on Bell, then I would like Roethlisberger a little bit more. But I mean, the pass attempts the last 3 weeks, 31, 24, 25, that's just not what you want to sign up for, generally speaking. And I don't think it's insane. I mean, if the price point is low, then it's fine. But, and he's, I think he's still got some talent. I don't think he's playing too poorly in spite of what the touchdown interception ratio would lead you to believe. It's just that he's got this incredible running back on his team, and his team has every incentive just to hand the ball to that running back, apparently, every single play. So I think that's kind of the total package here. I think it's also interesting on Ben. He's really not running at all this season. Negative 11 rushing yards. He used to be at least a little bit mobile. If you can't count on that and the passing isn't really there, then you just kind of have, yeah, I think Eli is a very fair comp here.
Yeah, I think that you're right on the mobility that's kind of just disappeared for him. He just that he used to be just like the kind of guy too. Like when you watch games, he was the guy that would just shake off linemen.
Exactly, extend the play, and that's all gone now.
That's 100% dead for him. And these guys get old. I mean, he and Eli, I think they're in the same draft class. They're just all getting old.
Phil the Thrill Rivers, Eli and Ben. Who's better? Well, I guess time will tell.
At least Eli's got the I guess Ben's got the Super Bowls too. On the other side of the ball, T.Y. Hilton coming off a huge game last week. I'm wondering how much the people will factor that in to their decision making. We talked about him on our No Halftime podcast the other day, if you want to go check that out. But you know, maybe we want to sum up some of our thoughts here on T.Y. Hilton, where we kind of stand on his, like, our willingness to go back and play a guy like him coming off a huge week last week.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't play him with your money. There's no chance I would look at a 9-target game of him and 5 receptions and excited. That's not exciting in a guy who's now 7,500 on FanDuel. It's a complete crime against humanity, that price. It's the most inconsistent wide receiver in football, basically, or second, maybe. I think we decided based on coefficient of variation. Obviously, he's got some big weeks. I guess he's an interesting big tournament play, except for the fact that you're not even going to really get that much separation because everyone thinks he's a good tournament play. So I have a great deal of difficulty picturing clicking the plus sign next to his name in any of my lineups.
I hope people play him. It's just the exact wrong guy to play. This is the exact wrong price. This guy, we have long track records of him just completely disappearing from
this
games,
season,
especially multiple seasons worth of this. This is just what happens with him. I'm not sure if it's a mental thing. I don't know what is going on with him, but he's the definition of peak and valley in terms of wide receiver. And really just the rest of this team. You mentioned Jack Doyle being an interesting play yesterday. I think he's still pretty highly targeted, 6,100 on FanDuel. The price for him has come up a little bit on DraftKings, where he's 5,200. It's getting close. You know, usually we're trying to sniff out some of these cheaper tight end plays. That seems like what most people are onto at this point, even playing double tight end on DraftKings, because some of these guys come so cheap. Doyle at 5,200, he's very good. I'm just not, that just might be a bridge too far in terms of his price. I'm not sure. I mean, they could be playing catch up and whatnot. So I think Doyle's an interesting kind of playing catch up guy. I don't have any interest in Hilton as along with you. And then the run game is still just this kind of, we're still playing Frank Gore. I don't know why. Marlon Mack, just Marlon Mack looks pretty good. And I don't know. They're just saving Marlon Mack for like when Andrew Luck, if he ever comes back, but I don't.
You got to save Marlon Mack's legs, dude. That's the key to their future. It's weird that you don't understand that.
And there's reports that there's some people in the Colts front office, and this is not DFS related, but there's some reports that the people in the Colts front office think that Luck might never come back. That he just, like, the shoulder injury that he suffered is just going to be career threatening. Like, he had got surgery on it and then it never got better. And then it got worse. And then they lied to their fans about what he was coming, so they could sell season tickets, and hey, look, now he might not come back ever. So bummer on Luck, because they've just completely ruined a career for a guy that probably should have been a generational quarterback. Yeah, all right. Yeah. Minnesota goes into Washington to play the Redskins. Minnesota coming off the bye week here. They let's start with them. They're an interesting team. They do want to run the ball. They haven't seemed to. They've sort of split the carries between Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon. Any interest in their running game? And then they also have some interesting guys in the passing game with some guys that have seen double digit targets in the past. Anything you like here on the Minnesota side?
Well, one thing I like right away is Stephon Diggs' injury tag, Q, teeth. I don't think I've ever seen teeth as the reason why people are limited in practice, but I just find that to be, like, totally hysterical. Like, I'm just trying to picture what kind of tooth situation would lead one to. Oh, I got a toothache, dude. Ah! It's like, you know that there's stuff that give people, that allow them to drill into their teeth, cut holes in them without them even noticing, right? Like, you could probably just take whatever that is and maybe just go play football. I don't know. I don't want to be insensitive to the guy. But so let's start with the running game, I guess. The running game to me, I mean, the price is right on guys like McKinnon and Murray, but the timeshare is not right to me. I mean, I get that they, I don't know, like, McKinnon had a good week last week. I guess that's kind of cool. Murray also had 19 carries and was totally terrible, but they don't seem to really trust either side of it. And it's hard. Like, we've been reluctant to play McKinnon at these prices, even when he was the only guy, but now he's getting less carries than the other player. And so, I mean, do you want to play either of these guys?
Nah, I wish one of them was a clear back. I mean, Latavius Murray's $4,000 price tag on DraftKings is close to something you'd be interested in if you thought, like, especially if he was gonna, if he's the goal line guy, which I believe he is. I think there's some touchdown upside on him, but the fact that they split that when they ran 36 times last week and it was basically split 60-40, that's just not good enough. These prices, you need really for it's tournament worthy because the price is down because of this timeshare. So, I mean, look, you can shoot some upside. McKinnon too, like, has some upside in the passing game. McKinnon's,
yeah, catching balls is great. Sure.
Yeah. 10 targets last week. So there's a case to be made for each one of these guys, but from a safety perspective, I don't think you really can go there. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, these guys have all seen big target share in the past here. Any interest on going up against Washington's defense?
Yeah, I'm listening on Thielen. I mean, 10 targets last week with 12 and 13 in the 2 weeks prior to that. He's also kind of positioned to be somewhat of a breakout guy. He did have the touchdown last week, but 98 yards on 5 catches, not out of the ordinary for him, I guess. I mean, or 98 yards on 10 targets, coming off a couple of less than stellar matchups coming into this game against Washington. I mean, Washington does have some secondary talent, of course, but I think if Diggs plays, a lot of that will be focused on Diggs, and I think that gives Thielen a little bit more room to get free underneath. So I do like Thielen here. I think he's definitely a cash game consideration for me, and I wouldn't feel unhappy at all about playing him.
Washington side, they have a lot, their injury report is lengthy because they just have a lot of question marks here. I think we're probably going to need to reserve some of the judgment on the value until we know for sure. And guys like Crowder, he's questionable. Jordan Reed is questionable. Yeah. And Niles Paul is questionable. The reason that those, and actually I guess Vernon Davis is questionable as well, but that's a hand injury. He'll probably play. The reason we need to reserve judgment is because I think if those guys are all out again, then Vernon Davis is an excellent play. If any one of them comes back, I think there needs to be downward guidance on Davis's. He saw a lot of targets last week, so I really would like him if he was the feature. He kind of became like a feature guy in the passing attack. But if all of them played, I think we probably just need to ignore this situation because it'd be very difficult to figure out where I mean, I guess you can make a small case for Crowder as a possession guy here, but
Crowder's a guy I'm keeping an eye on for on both sides. Like if he got a full clean bill of health, I could consider him, but more exciting would be if he didn't play and then we could just play Davis. Cause I don't think that Niles Paul impacts Davis as much as Crowder does, just cause Crowder was eating so much target share. And I think he actually catches a lot of balls and it's kind of the same realm as Davis. I mean, they've liked Paul in the past. You know, we've seen him fill in decently for Jordan Reed, but the fact that he's dealing with a concussion just leads me to believe that even if he's out there, I mean, he was seeing fewer targets than Davis anyway and fewer snaps and less playing time. So I think that it's really Crowder is the guy we want to keep our eye on here.
Yeah, Crowder 2 weeks ago had 13 targets at nine catches for over 100 yards. So if you thought he was a double-digit candidate with a clean bill of health, then I think we could talk it into it. I think we're just going to need to wait. We just are going to need to wait for more injury stuff to come out here. Chargers go in to play Jacksonville. Jacksonville -3.5 favorite at home. Looks like Fournette is going to play after being a bad boy before the team meeting, before the game last week.
Very bad.
Leonard. We talked a lot about this yesterday, so I don't want to go too far back into it. But my concern with Fournette was that if a team is willing to suspend their best player for an entire game, that's a sign that makes you a little bit iffy. That means they're willing to bench you halfway through a game if they don't like something you're seeing you're doing as well. Yeah. So I think we need to be a little bit bearish on Fournette just for that fact. It's weird because that kind of thing doesn't come up very often, but the fact that it has happened and it's an outlier thing makes me good for the Jags that they're trying to send a message. A lot of teams are not willing. I'm sure this happens way more than we know about, but we just don't know. We just don't find out because the guys.
Yeah. People get too big for their britches and, you know, talking too much smack or, you know, just whatever. I agree completely.
So I think if you trust that he's going to play the entire game, though, Fournette is a pretty much an excellent play. Anything else on the Jacksonville side? We've seen Marquise Lee get some more targets. That was a guy you mentioned going into last week as liking kind of for a target share kind of guy. Do you still have the same opinion about him going into this week?
Sure. I mean, he didn't obviously do anything to change that last week. He was awesome. 12 targets, 8 receptions with the touchdown. I think, you know, we now have the building track record of him being a preferred target of Blake Bortles. And I think he does fit the mold of what they lost with Allen Robinson, at least a little, not necessarily in terms of physique or, you know, running stats or anything, but in terms of the routes he can run. So I think that as a good safety outlet, Bortles really hasn't had that as an inaccurate passer. He does really need that to get comfortable out there and also to keep the defense honest. Like if they can just sit on the deep ball, if that's all he's going to try, or just sit on Fournette, then this just allows him to attack across a different axis. So I do like Lee. And, you know, I know that there is an injury tag on him right now. He did sit out Wednesday's session. He returned to Thursday's practice in a limited capacity. I think if there's any question at all about his health, then don't play him. Like he's more of a fringe play than like a lock for cash games or anything. But I still think he's definitely a guy worth keeping on your radar.
What about Chargers side? The Jacksonville defense has been very good this season. Keenan Allen's been a guy we've liked, although I'm not sure. Do you think the targets are trending down and they're going to continue to stay down? This is a bad matchup in general for them, so maybe we take a wait and see approach. But is this just kind of the wrong defensive matchup for targeting Charger guys?
I think so. I mean, I'm a little bit the Jacksonville situation is a weird one because people that I trust to look at this stuff kind of are of two minds against Jacksonville. You know, some people are saying, well, hey, Jacksonville's been insane against the pass this season. But if you look at strength of schedule, dude, I'll just run it down for you. Houston with Tom Savage, Tennessee, Baltimore, the Jets, Pittsburgh, who they were terrible against, Jared Goff and the Rams, Indianapolis, Cincinnati. I mean, you literally cannot get a better schedule than the Jags have had against the pass. And now I don't know that the Chargers are necessarily the ones that are going to blow them up and, you know, expose them as the emperor with no clothes on or anything. But I think for big tournament purposes, I think Keenan Allen's a guy who will see almost no ownership that probably has a lot more upside than it appears. Now the targets are going the wrong way, and that's why this probably isn't the week to target him for cash game purposes, but keep an eye on targeting the Jags going forward. Don't be scared off playing like your otherwise really good plays because they've been good against the pass this season. I am utterly convinced that this is basically just the same pass defense it was last year, and they've just had an incredible schedule.
Yeah, that's a great call. That's a pretty damning list of quarterbacks that you faced that you really just can't. You almost can't get worse.
Yeah, actually can't. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger is by far and away the best quarterback they faced. Guys, 10 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. And most of all that performance came against this exact team. So,
And we played Brown in that game, liking that matchup, kind of just as a thinking that the Jags were slightly overrated. And I guess listening to that list again, it still probably stands. They do rank first in DVOA against the pass. That is somewhat strength of schedule adjusted for, but I think that probably it's probably not enough. And they're funny.
I think DVOA, just like a lot of stats, I mean, you know, having created our own statistical modeling systems, it gets really hard to somebody's going to be the outlier, I guess is my point, right? And somebody's going to have the best strength of schedule. Somebody is going to have the very best matchups on a week-to-week basis. And a model that can account for that is really difficult to create, because models generally tend to try to regress and say, oh, well, there was probably some luck involved, or, you know, or they couldn't have been that lucky, you know. And not that your model has that kind of like subjective opinion or anything like that, but it's just really, really hard to account for really unusual circumstances. And facing a slate of QBs like that through 9 weeks, see, part of DVOA, I would guess, is saying, well, sure, they've had some schedule luck, but they'd also have to be insanely good to have these results. And that might be true. You know, maybe the Jags are simply average, or maybe they're even a top 12 defense against the pass, but looking like the clear cut number one defense against the pass, I just don't buy it for a second.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because what's also damning about them is that they're ranked 31st against the run. And that same list of guys that you went down, it's not like there's a ton of huge feature backs on this list either. I mean, like, they got Lamar Miller in week one. He's garbage. Like, the Tennessee running attack is legit, and they get completely throttled by them. Baltimore at that point had not figured out what they were doing with their running game. The Jets, we talked about, they had Bell, and they got Gurley, and then they got Indianapolis. So it's not like they've played a who's who of running backs either. And they've gotten completely thrashed at times on the ground. I think Melvin Gordon is interesting here, especially if there's a game script here that Jacksonville gets down early. They've had the good fortune also of just getting up in games and being able to just lean on Fournette. And the games where that's not going to happen is going to be interesting to see, sort of like when teams are kind of just continuing to rush down their throat. So I think there's a scenario. Our system actually, from a points per dollar standpoint, actually really likes Melvin Gordon this week. I think partly because of what Jacksonville has not done in terms of rush defense. So I think interesting guy to keep an eye on this game. I said this game is more interesting from a fantasy perspective than I kind of thought it would be at first glance. I think there are a bunch of different ways you can go, especially in tournaments. Like I said, I think you can consider Fournette in cash. Cincinnati goes in and plays, talk about a game that's not that interesting. Cincinnati goes in to play Tennessee. Tennessee -4.5 favorites at home here. What are your thoughts on Mariota? Mariota is a guy who I really actually wanted to write Mariota up in terms of an interesting cash gameplay, because he's becoming a lot cheaper. But since the injury, he went down 4 weeks ago with an injury. And since then, yeah, if you look at his running attempts, they have gone completely away. Like, this was a guy that ran a decent amount, you know, 4 to 5 times a game. And that, but yep, almost from the line of demarcation here is this injury. And now he's all of a sudden not running anymore. He's running 6 total times in the last 3 weeks. Do you think that's like an organizational thing? They've kind of told him, hey, dude, we need you to stay on the field. You need to stop running. Do you think it's kind of bad luck, and he's going to get back to that 5 or 6 carry a game kind of guy? Do you think that the injury and then that thing disappearing is a real thing that we should monitor?
I think so, because two things can happen there. For a question of talent, like, you know, maybe his legs, he just lost a step because he's still a little bit banged up. I know that all too well as someone who's had an injury suck, so I can speak authoritatively there. I think it's also a question of opportunity. Like, it's very realistic that his coaches just come and say, Marcus, you're the future of this team. Who cares about getting the extra 15 yards? We're not going to win the freaking Super Bowl, dude. Like, just step out of bounds, slick a slide, you know, and if you don't, we'll just take you out of the game. Like, that type of thing can happen in football, especially for running quarterbacks. We've seen it time and time again. Cam Newton, you know, stops running. Vince Young stops running. Alex Smith has taken breaks from running. So I think there's a lot of different precedent for this type of thing being sustainable. And I think if you believe that and I believe that on Mariota, then the passing only side for Mariota is not very inspiring from my perspective. So I think, unfortunately, Mariota looks like a stay away to me.
Yeah, and that's where I landed, because like I said, I was really close to making the case, and then when I just saw the running had dropped off. They're still in a timeshare here with Murray and Henry, which is just, it's too difficult, and they've both been pretty kind of good at times. Yep. So when that happens, the price is in a weird spot. Anything in the Tennessee passing game, Delaney Walker possibly is a cheaper tight end play. He saw 5 targets or so last week. Rishard Matthews has seen some red zone touches. Anything else on the Cincinnati side, or excuse me, anything on the Tennessee side, and then is there anything on the Cincinnati side that I'm not seeing anything, but maybe you see something that I don't.
Nah, Green kind of has disappeared completely, so that's too bad. On the Tennessee side, and then I wouldn't consider anyone else on Cincinnati even for a second. Definitely not Mr. Joe Mixon. I'm just I'm over it for now, I guess is my general opinion there. Delanie Walker has seen increased opportunity, went down a little bit against Baltimore, but did convert the five targets he had into five receptions for 71 yards, certainly in that consideration category of the mid 5,000s tight ends. Rishard Matthews, you know, I've gotten Risharded on a few times, Doug. I won't lie. I'm more than once, in fact. And last week we get the good Rishard, which is when he turns his 5 to 7 targets into at least one long touchdown. So he was good. He's a big tournament only play for me. I think it's always, you always want to think about playing him for cash because you're like, hey, he's cheap. The opportunity's not so bad. Look, he's got a few good games on this price, but he's really an extremely poor man's version of T.Y. Hilton in my mind, where the performance is really, really up and down, except it centers around a lower overall total. So I'm not super into Matthews right now.
And the people that are going to say like, oh, well, AJ Green's his bad game last week was because he got kicked out of the game for basically just choke slamming Jalen Ramsey. He had been bad the previous weeks too, like 3 catches each of the 2 weeks before that. So I don't know. The quarterback play for him is a shame. The Dalton just stinks. I don't think it's a Green problem.
Well, that's what I think on AJ Green. I think he's just getting frustrated. I think he's just getting fed up, and the performance, the attitude, I just don't like anything about it, frankly. So I'm just not gonna play AJ Green on these prices. No thanks.
Packers go in and face the Bears. I did talk about Jordan Howard as being a pretty strong cash game play going into this week. They're -5. The line has moved up from 4.5 to 5.5 on the Bears side of the ball, and they have shown the great willingness to have him carry the ball a lot over the course of the season, really in any kind of game script. So we talked about him yesterday. Bears, the rest of the receiver core for the Bears side, I mean, they lost obviously Zach Miller to that gruesome injury 2 weeks ago. They're not a team that they don't want to throw the ball at all, and especially if they have any kind of lead, I don't know, that ball is never going to leave the hands of Trubisky. What about Green Bay side of here? They're still with Hundley. We've really downward guided all of the receivers since losing Rodgers, and now it looks like even the run game is going to be a time slip between Jones and Montgomery. Are the no Rodgers Packers a total stay away?
Yeah, unfortunately, it kind of feels that way to me right now. Jordy Nelson just kind of fallen off a cliff. He's also just kind of old. There's no evidence that he's really in any position to bounce back. Adams, I'm a little bit intrigued. I've talked about how sometimes these backup quarterbacks will come in and settle on a possession receiver that they like. Adams kind of fits that mold for me. I mean, 10 targets last week, 7 receptions for 53 yards. Could be on a verge of a breakout there. Definitely don't mind him for big tournament purposes. And you could talk me into it. Like, if he was just in there for cash games, I wouldn't X him out. Was pretty bad against New Orleans with 2 receptions on 5 targets. But the prior week against Minnesota, he had 10 targets as well. So I think Adams is sort of a plan, the plan B right now for Hundley. And I think that's worth something. Randall Cobb, sorry, buddy. It seems like it's the end of the line for him. Hopefully he's got a car dealership or an announcing gig somewhere. It's kind of my take on Randall Cobb. They just, kicked Martellus Bennett off the team. They just don't seem to need anybody to come fill in on that team right now. So I unfortunately, not super interested in Green Bay. And you mentioned the guy I like on Chicago already as well, which is Jordan Howard. They don't support anyone in the passing game whatsoever. And that does create outsized opportunity for Howard. So I can consider playing him in any format. I think there's huge upside. Anyone who can get 30 plus carries in a game or 30 plus touches also can get multiple touchdowns. And if you do the math and you get both of those in one game, then you can have a GPP winning performance on your hands in very, very short order. So I do like Howard, to the point where I may even prioritize him if it were close between him and someone else. And everyone else from this game is just kind of makes me roll my eyes.
All right, before we get to the 4 o'clock games, hit us up with a sponsor.
Yeah, let's talk about fantasyfactor.com. Fantasy Factor is a great place to go if you want to play salary cap game format daily fantasy games without having to run up against people putting in hundreds of lineups and grinding you to dust with their significant edge. A great place for players to play with $5 to $100, say, per session. You go over there and check them out. They also have free rolls every single week. They've been having actually really good, slightly underfunded basketball free rolls. Last week, they had a huge overlay in their guaranteed contest on Sunday for NFL, too. So head on over to fantasyfactor.com and get started.
4 o'clock, Houston goes in to play the Rams. Rams, huge favorites in this game, -11.5. We talked about Gurley yesterday as being in a great spot here, and that the price, if you were trying to prioritize Gurley or Bell, we thought that Bell would probably be the way to go. But Gurley at this point is just more expensive than Bell, and I think that you just need to continue to go with Le'Veon. Do you see, though, if you think Bell is going to be highly owned in GBPs, and I think he will be, do you think Gurley is an interesting pivot around the same price? Like, I don't think that people are going to go that direction as much just because of the price here. And it feels like there's some separation on that play.
I feel like in tournaments they might. And I like Gurley. I guess I'm not as enthusiastic about him as some people are, just because unlike some of the other guys in sort of the super elite usage category, like say Elliott or even Fournette, definitely Le'Veon Bell, Gurley doesn't always see that. I mean, I get that it was a blowout last week, but 18 overall touches, 26 the week before, so that's really good. Be one of Bell's worst weeks. 24 against Jacksonville in a great matchup, 16 against Seattle, 30 against Dallas, so that's pretty good. 33 against San Francisco, but then 19 and 24 earlier. So he's certainly getting a good amount of opportunity. You don't want to turn your nose up at this level, but he, and if for a big tournament, absolutely. Goal line back, three down back, definitely has the potential for 30 touches in a game. I guess I just want to be triple sure. It doesn't sound like I'm recommending him as a cash game pivot for Bell here. So that's the only thing I want to get across. Because yeah, of course he has the upside that you're looking for, but don't play him over Le'Veon Bell for cash.
On the Houston side, we saw a huge target share again for DeAndre Hopkins, and just kind of turning back into what happens with DeAndre Hopkins when the quarterback play is bad. Yeah. You think that the targets, though, are enough to kind of support his price tag at this point? Like at some point, DeAndre Hopkins is going to be cheap enough to play. Like 7,600 for him, he's the same price as Michael Thomas, less than AJ Green, same price as Dez, basically. Of that group of guys, would you feel comfortable playing Hopkins and maybe above that group just because he just sees so many damn targets? They're not great targets, but at some point volume does matter.
Absolutely. I mean, I think he's by far the best play among that group because 16 targets in a game just from any NFL quarterback, frankly, is worth this price. And the fact that he has had some success, that he's the only red zone target, he's the only guy, basically it just seems like Savage is just so terrified to be in the pocket that he just drops back, just throws it as hard as he can towards DeAndre Hopkins and just hopes for the best. That's kind of my read on the situation right now. I'm going to definitely be thinking hard about playing Hopkins. I don't know if I would force it or anything, but I still think he's quite a good play. He's just the only option, right? What else is there to know here?
No, I think that's it. I think he can get shadow covered by Jermaine Johnson. That might not be the worst thing in the world. So I think that I set the targets lower because the way our system is just kind of set up is just going to give him 16 targets right now would make him like the best play in the world. I don't think, and 16 is unrealistic anyway, but even to set him in his previous target share with Watson around, it's just, it would make him a play. But if you think he's going to see 12, 13 targets at this 7,600 price, we could be looking at a very low price. And yes, we all clearly understand that Tom Savage is the quarterback. Dallas goes into Atlanta. Big news here. Zeke is going to serve his suspension. That was handed out yesterday, and then no one's fighting. I guess this is the last stop on the appeal train. That is going to start now. I was a little confused about what to do here. I gave Alfred Morris 14 carries and like two targets. Do you think that, one, can we trust Alfred Morris here enough? He's very cheap on both sites. Oh, he's actually much cheaper on FanDuel. He's only 5,600 on FanDuel. Do you think we can trust that opportunity for Morris? Do you think they have too many other cooks in the kitchen here? Like they have Rod Smith, they have Darren McFadden, who I believe that they're going to activate. He hasn't touched the field this season, but I think they've been kind of just waiting for the Zeke suspension to start on McFadden. What do we do here with the Dallas running game? I want to think that Morris is the play and he's possibly going to be a very popular, like, kind of chalky play. And at the same time, I'm just worried that we don't have a clear scope of what Dallas's true plan is.
We just need definitive news. That's the only thing that would make me interested in making a play here. Otherwise, I'm not, like, if McFadden is activated and we just get no news, or if there's something like, yeah, we're going to go with the hot hand or something like that, it's a total and complete stay away from me. If Morris is named the starter and maybe McFadden's activated and they're like, yeah, we're going to mix McFadden in, like, I just need to know, I need to hear that at least they have a plan. And even still, I might not trust it completely, but that's my baseline here. I can't just get cracking on this, just on some kind of blind faith that Morris is going to be the guy, just because we haven't seen anything from any other running back on the team all season. Like, there's not even any sort of clear hierarchy on who's been the RB2, because Elliott's just been given every single carry while they wait for this suspension to finally land. So yeah, I need more information.
Yeah, it's going to be, I hope we get it. I don't know if we're going to. I do think that people will probably prioritize Morris in this situation, and it's going to be a close call. Even at this limit, somewhat, I could be limited carries. He's coming up pretty high in the system in terms of points per dollar, especially, like I said, especially on FanDuel, where he's the price makes a little bit more sense there. I can't, I not able to find his price here on DraftKings right away. But I do know that it wasn't as advantageous a play over there. On the other side of the ball, sorry, on the other side of the ball, the Falcons, Devontae Freeman, we've just seen his carries kind of trending in the wrong direction. Hasn't had more than 12 carries in the last 3 weeks. Do you think that we're in too much of a timeshare here? I mean, Falcons are home favorites against a clearly worse Cowboys team that doesn't when they don't have Elliott. What do we think about the Falcons side here? And we did talk about Julio Jones a decent amount on the podcast.
I think Julio is the only guy I'm taking a really serious look at. I definitely am not considering the running backs given the timeshare. Sanu's a guy I still think is somewhat interesting for big tournaments. Took a week off last week, but have been coming off 7 and 10 targets respectively against the Jets in New England. So I think he's a worthwhile look for cash games. But otherwise, I think the Falcons, it's just too many mouths to feed to really sustain consistent DFS performance. And for me, on a main slate like this, it's just not, they're not going to come into consideration for me.
Yeah, and Freeman hasn't been able to run the ball because they've been losing every game. Yeah. They've lost 4 of their last 5 games, and they kind of just snuck out a win against the Jets in bad weather. So, I mean, I guess if they were to get back to their winning ways and be able to win, to get a lead and actually run the ball, maybe you would see increased opportunity for Freeman. They just haven't had a game script that's been able to sustain that. One more thing about the Cowboys side. I did guide up Dez's targets here with no Zeke, because I do think that he actually, as much as anybody else, stands to see increased usage here along with Dak, just because if they're not going to be able to run the ball as effectively as they have been, where they're among the best or maybe the best running team in all of football, I think that we do see more of the weight land on Dak and Dez's shoulders for sure. And Dez is not all that expensive, so I think he might be creeping toward the cash game plays as well. That's something I want to try to evaluate. And again, I'm with you too. I really hope we get news. 425 other 425 game, Giants go in and play San Francisco. We talked a lot about Eli Manning. We talked about a lot of the Giants here. Eli, Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, all as firmly in the cash game plays. And I know some people are going to not like that idea. I have to remind everyone, San Francisco allows a ton of opponent possessions and they are very bad on defense. This is exactly like San Francisco is kind of like the equivalent of like the Phoenix Suns in basketball or the Nets, right? Like if you can find these faster teams that allow a ton of possessions and you get guys against them whose prices are pretty compromised. I mean, Eli's not very good, yep. And this is why the price is compromised. He's also had some really bad matchups, and they haven't looked all that good. But we talked about that a lot in depth, and I think we're going to have some Giants in our cash games for sure this week. San Francisco side of the ball, anything you like here? I mean, there's some cheaper wide receivers the system's kind of wanting to play. Goodwin, Aldrick Robinson. Maybe we get some more carries out of Carlos Hyde. Giants defense is bad, too. I'm wondering, for all the opportunity we've seen, we think we have for the Giants, do we see opportunity on the 49ers side?
I think the 49ers are kind of a wasteland for DFS purposes, but I do think Carlos Hyde is somewhat interesting for big tournaments. He's seen a huge uptick in targets this season overall, and recently in particular. I mean, 11 targets and 9 receptions last week. He's almost like I'm going to call him a slightly rich man's Christian McCaffrey. I mean, you pay a little bit more for it, and the target share isn't quite as steady, and he hasn't, I guess maybe he's the same socioeconomic classes version of Christian McCaffrey, kind of the same thing, and that the rushing hasn't been very impressive, but the targets sort of have been. If you think he can put it together for a given week, again, he's putting together reasonable performance with no touchdown share whatsoever. So, you know, with San Francisco scheduled to score some points, and you just heard about their other skill position players, I don't think it's unreasonable to pencil Hyde in for some production here. So I do somewhat like him, but I'm just sort of reaching because I just basically hate everyone on this team right now.
Aldrick Robinson and Marquise Goodwin combined for 16 targets last week and turned them into 4 total catches. We might see a Jimmy Garoppolo sighting this week. I think there was some conflicting reports about whether he was going to play. That would theoretically be a quarterback upgrade over what they had been getting. But it's still a difficult situation to trust. And I'm with you that I don't mind Hyde here. The price is really, Garoppolo, you think would be an upgrade over CJ Batard, right? But it's still a very difficult situation to trust. And I think if we have Batard in there, it's just bad enough, even with all those targets. I'm not sure we completely get there on the receivers. And I have to mention, the Giants defense does suck. So I don't know. it's going to be an interesting one to try to figure that one out. New England goes and plays Denver in the Sunday night game. New England, is the defensive matchup just bad enough here for New England? I mean, they are 7.5 point favorites going into Denver, but is the matchup just not good enough for us to to warrant paying all the way up for a guy like Brady, let's say.
It's really that the price adjustment on these guys hasn't been dramatic enough to consider it, you know? So Denver's defense is not only really strong, but if these guys are priced in the same sort of ballpark as they have been recently, then you have to just, we're going to offer more downward guidance on their projections than the prices would imply. And a guy like Brady, like, he was insane to start the season, basically had two really, really good games back to back. And since then, he basically hasn't been paying these prices anyway. So taking him in the worst overall matchup, it's a total non-starter for me. I'm not going to play him for sure. Guys like Hogan, you know, if he weren't doubtful, if he wasn't banged up, maybe I would consider him. But other than that, like, I just think I'm stretching here. I'm paying too much for Gronk, given his fantasy point per game performances. Again, particularly after those first two really, really good weeks. And the running backs, I'm definitely not going to be playing any guessing games on that. I think New England, unfortunately, is a really, really bad spot here, both just for broader DFS implications, but in particular in this game against a great defense in Denver. So, nope, unfortunately, I can't touch him. And on the Denver side, my groaning sound hopefully says it all. Are you seeing anything you like on the Denver side? I mean, we have seen New England give up some big passing performances this year.
Yeah, it's Brock Osweiler. You can't do it. He's the worst. Yeah. There's a reason these teams don't want him. He's awful. Even the layman's NFL fan knows that, like, Brock Osweiler is about as bad as it gets. Now you can't even go there, even against a New England team that's let up a lot of big performances. He's just some kind of bad. Final game, the Monday night game that's not on any of the main slates. But if you're playing like the Sunday evening one, or if you played last Thursday, but that doesn't really matter as much. Although I guess there's late swap. Carolina is at home against the Miami Dolphins, -10 favorites. We talked a lot about Christian McCaffrey yesterday as being a cash game play in a perfect spot. The touches are back up. It looks like he's going to be, or the touches are just up. He's finally outsnapped and outcarried Jonathan Stewart last week. He's still coming pretty cheap, and I think the opportunity is more than there for him. Other guys on the Carolina side, we kind of were looking for a breakout maybe from Funchess after they got rid of Kelvin Benjamin. That didn't, he saw the targets, didn't really convert it to a huge game. Do you still like anything, or is there anything to like with the Carolina passing game?
No, I mean, Funchess, I think, is reasonable. I think if you want to consider McCaffrey as a part of the Carolina passing game, then that's fine, too. I guess we're only talking about the Sunday into Monday slate at this point, right? The late Sunday into Monday. So I guess from that perspective, yeah, sure, Funchess and McCaffrey both seem fine, given that you're only looking at a two-game slate, and we have seen some performance out of both of them. But, you know, understand that we're using the two-game bar here. Like, this isn't – we're not necessarily talking whole slate cash game viability. So yeah, if you happen to be playing those slates, then sure, consider those guys.
It's a shame that this game is coming on the Monday evening, because there are a lot of good plays. Yeah, I mean, the Carolina defense, I think, would be Landry's interesting catch up. I think the Carolina defense would be interesting because, like, if Miami's has 14 implied points, I mean,
that doesn't seem very good.
That's pretty damn low. That's like the same amount that the Giants had the week that they went and actually beat Denver. But 14 implied points for a team that is as bad as it gets. So it's a shame that this game's falling on the Monday night that doesn't fall on the main slate, because I think there is value to be had. But such is the way.
Keep an eye on the Miami running game for next week, though, because, you know, with Jay Ajayi there, we didn't really see anyone rise to prominence. Kenny and Drake was somewhat reasonable here, had 15 touches, a guy you could consider in this Sunday into Monday slate. It's not clear if they're just going to be like ready to give up on running the ball altogether. We did see Ajayi be a fairly large volume guy in the past, but Kenyon Drake is kind of my guy to keep an eye on as we look forward a whole another week to week 11.
Yep, that makes sense. All right, dfsr.com/NBA will get you that free 3-day trial. Go check out our NBA podcast as well. We do believe we have an NHL podcast coming down the pike as well. So if you're into hockey, Chris is going to start posting. I think we're getting close to having that feed up and running in the next couple of days. So keep an eye out for that if you are a hockey person. So dfsr.com/NBA, free 3-day trial, $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, enjoy your weekend of football. I will see you live and in person tomorrow. Getting very excited about that as we will do some live podcasts from the Casa de la Davis next week. All right. Yeah, lucky everybody.